And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, along with Kyle.
Hello.
We are still on the train in Spain heading towards Portugal this week. This is the second of two shows that are coming to you from a Spanish train. And we are basically, I believe in this particular case, we were in a cabin with the lights out, just watching the countryside go by, and trying to record radio so that we could get a few hours of sleep before we arrived at the crack of dawn in Portugal.
Yes, and it was really the crack of dawn. I mean, we rolled in at what would be like 7 a.m., and that was like 15 minutes. You wake up, and then they pull in, and you better be off the train.
We'll talk about Portugal next time because, well, there's a whole series of adventures that happened there. But this time, let's go back to that train in Spain. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Enjoy.
Entonces, pues la curiosidad simplemente ya atrae a tanta gente que hacen taquilla. Total, remake que esperamos para marzo del 2015, todavía queda tiempo, y dirigida por Kenneth Branagh. Director también de Thor, entre otras películas. Uh-huh. Y sabemos que entre el reparto está Helena Bonham Carter, uh-huh, que será la hada madrina, no hace de mala, hace de buena. Richard Madden, que será el príncipe. Lily James, que será la cenicienta. Uh-huh. Y la más importante,
sí,
y la temible y despiadada madrastra, que será...
¿Quién?
Kate Blanchett.
¡Ah, me encanta!
Blanchett, perdón.
Sí.
Monísima, seguro, y maravillosa de mala, seguro, vamos. Y bueno, la historia es la misma de siempre, la madrastra malvada y las dos hermanastras, Anastasia y Grisela, que le hacen la vida imposible a ella y tal. Que en lo que se refiere al cuento, pues no hay mucho cambio por lo que se sepa ahora.
Bueno.
Sí, ¿qué tal? Pero ya está el primer teaser de la película, que lo podéis ver en mi blog, yo lo cuelgo para que lo veáis todos. El película donde la peque, .wordpress.com, ese es el blog. El película donde la peque, todo junto, peque con K. En el Facebook, el película donde la peque. Uh-huh. Y en Twitter, @peliculonpeque.
Venga,
ahí pongo yo todos los trailers y todas las cositas estas nuevas que salen.
Ahí podéis verlo todo.
Y para terminar, otra película que saldrá dentro de poco también, bueno, el año que viene, tendremos que esperar, Into the Woods.
Ahí en el bosque nos adentramos.
Sí.
¿Esta de qué va?
Y bueno, es una versión moderna de los cuentos clásicos de los hermanos Grimm, ¿no? Todos estos cuentos que nos encantan también.
Uh-huh.
Está dirigida por Rob Marshall, que es, entre otras películas, Piratas del Caribe.
Uh-huh.
Y también estará Johnny Depp por ahí, haciendo de hombre lobo.
¡Hombre! ¡Otro pelúo!
Pero bueno, nuestra bruja malvada esta vez será Meryl Streep.
¡Me encanta!
Sí, se pone en el papel de la bruja malvada, que también nos cuenta de un modo original todos estos cuentos, ¿no? Y le dan una vuelta de tuerca. Mezclan todas las historias, pues la Cenicienta, Rapunzel, Caperucita Roja y Jack y las judías mágicas.
¡Qué bueno!
Así que nada, tendremos que esperar un poquito, pero estaremos con ansia de verlo.
Hombre, Meryl Streep, oscarizada, una crack.
Sí, sí.
Hará un papelón seguro.
Seguro.
Bueno, pues las malvadas están de moda. Bueno, si queréis enteraros de más sobre malvadas y sobre cine y sobre series y demás, y ver esos teasers y trailers y demás, detalles e información, pasaros por el blog de Tere Vázquez, es elpeliculondelapeque.wordpress.com, peque con K, recuérdalo, y síguela en el Twitter, @peliculonpeque. Bueno, en el Facebook también tenéis de todo. Bueno, querida mía, que tengas un fin de semana fantástico.
Muchísimas gracias, guapa. Igualmente, y nos vemos, hablamos la semana que viene.
Y sé muy mala.
Sí, como me gusta.
La noche es nuestra.
We're still stopped at this station, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is with that.
Well, I could look up my train book and see how long we're supposed to be here for, but I'm sure we're doing exactly what we're supposed to do. That's how these trains are. It's incredible to me how every country, I've said this before, every country seems to get it as far as high-speed rail. And Spain is no exception. Trains are modern and fast, and it's incredible. You hear all these things about Spain in the news, about how it's a failing economy, and the EU is basically about to kick them out. And you come here, and it's a whole modern society. Infrastructure is great. People seem to be doing well, it's you have to wonder, how do you measure wealth exactly? Because back home in our country, it just seems noisy and dirty, and you know, little things like what we saw last night. We were walking across a bridge, and we saw a series of buildings just lit up in red. It looked absolutely amazing. We don't know what the buildings were, what they were for, but it was just an incredible artistic touch that was just done for the sake of doing it. There was a bridge that had green light coming from under the water. It was just basically illuminating the bridge from below. Why don't we do things like that? Why don't we make things beautiful and artistic and just not so grim all the time? It just seems like we're always finding excuses for not moving forward. And here I see all kinds of nice things happening. Some of them big, some of them small, but they matter. They all matter.
But, we're the wealthiest country in the world.
Yeah, you know, I don't believe that. I think Spain is wealthier than we are. I think Germany is certainly wealthier. I think almost every country we've been to, they have a better standard of living. They're, you know, healthcare is not an issue, obviously. That's one of my pet peeves. Mass transit is easy to use and plentiful. All kinds of things that we have to struggle for just are provided. And that, to me, is true wealth.
Oh, no, I wasn't talking about that. I was talking about the most rich jerks with liquid cash.
And there aren't that many of them in my circle anyway. A lot of people are struggling back home. So, I don't know. It's we're doing something wrong, and we really need to sort that out and figure out ways to be happy and progressive and modern, things like that.
The other thing I would say is that we have the most rich jerks with liquid cash and no taste. And they're tacky.
All right, well, you seem to have some issues to resolve with those people. But let's go back to Granada, because that's where we were heading on the second leg of our Spain pass. And we took the train down there, and yeah, I was stressing over booking tickets to get back up to Madrid and then over to Lisbon. What we wound up doing, make a long story short, we found another place. In fact, the place that we just left from on this particular trip, the name, the town that we can't remember, we found that there was an overnight train that passed through there, a different overnight train that went to Lisbon. And that was a good possibility as far as what we were looking into getting. Of course, getting up there was another difficult part, but we managed to figure that out. Then the problem became that we couldn't figure out how to get an actual, what's called a hotel train. So I guess an actual room for ourselves that we didn't have to share with a whole bunch of people, which can be kind of stressful sometimes, especially if you're getting on after they've already settled in. And we just didn't want to do that. Call us antisocial if you want, but we just didn't feel like going into a train car that had a family in it already. And you know, obviously we couldn't be doing what we're doing now. So we went to the station and we found... actually, it was a smart move going to the station, because in Granada there's not nearly as many people waiting online. And the guy there said, yeah, there's a... we didn't quite say it like that, but after some language issues, he said that there was a two-person compartment available that we could get. Of course, it would cost a bit more, but at that point, I just didn't care. I just wanted to get on our way and be happy with the choices we made. It allowed us to stay in Granada for an extra afternoon, which was good, because I'd wasted an entire afternoon trying to book tickets, and it shouldn't be that difficult, that stressful. And fortunately, after that, it was not. We got to wander around Granada, and what an amazing city that is, just architecturally. Went through these incredibly old streets, very narrow streets, and we learned a lot about tapas too, because tapas is huge in Granada. Kyle, do you have any thoughts on the tapas culture?
So, in addition to being tacky and tasteless, we don't support our artists, okay? And then on top of that, and what I mean by that is we don't provide avenues for them to be taken seriously and be a functioning part of our society, right? To be honored and then by virtue of that, then have people who perhaps aren't artists get the art, like understand it, and say, oh, that makes sense. This bridge should be lit. That's gorgeous. And then perpetuate that and support more beauty in the city. And then you have more ideas and more happiness and imagination. And you create this really, kind of thriving and brilliant, just vivid society. Yeah, maybe there's people having a tough time and stuff, but they're amongst this architecture and mixing the old with the new and all this gorgeousness. And then on top of that, we have like lazy construction, lowest bidder, and unions, and all these jerks that would take any of these projects and just like throw wrenches into the gears of progress, bureaucracies, city boards, and all this crap. And that is why, and to say nothing of the infrastructure that we would beautify in the first place.
Did I fail to hand the microphone to you before I was talking about that? Because we're now not even with what we're talking about.
All right, tapas. Yeah, it's amazing. You know, people often go and they drink and they just get completely out of their mind. Maybe you're lucky if you get peanuts or something in a bar in the States. Well, the attitude's really brilliant. You get kind of, sometimes you go and maybe you walk into a bar, right, in Granada, Madrid, one of these places we've been, and you order dos cervezas, right? Two beers.
Two small beers.
That's it. And they're really small. They're actually 0.2, they're 2 centiliters or 0.2 liters.
200 milligrams.
Milliliters.
Milliliters, I'm sorry.
Anyway.
It's small, small beer, but maybe about half the size of what you might expect.
No one can blame you for not being good at cursive. So you order two beers in a bar, and you would order a pint, right, an imperial pint, or a full pint, maybe at a regular, like, American pub or British pub. The attitude's a little different. You stay and you order a couple of these beers. They might be a euro. Or 70 euro cent, 60 euro cent.
Ridiculously cheap.
Very cheap. It's a small, kind of like a schooner. A schooner is sort of an equivalent volume of drink. But, and here's the but, when these drinks arrive, very soon after, your barkeep or barmaid will arrive with a small plate.
Yes.
Possibly with some forks, possibly with some tiny rolls with some meat or something in them. Maybe it's a sliver of a quiche of sorts.
Maybe it's a little bit of potato salad.
Could be a plate of olives with some toothpicks.
It could be all kinds of different things. Maybe some fish and sardines or something like that. Thing is, every time you order another round, another couple of small beers, you'll get a different plate. They'll bring you more plates. And they say this is thank you for the drinks, for ordering the drinks. They thank you by giving you little bits of food as well. And that is the tapas culture. And we found that this was the case in many, many different places. There were some renowned places that we went to. But we also were walking around the other day, and we just decided to stop at a place and have a couple of Cokes. And the sandwich came out with a couple of Cokes. And I wasn't even expecting that.
Blindsided completely. Our tapas radar was completely shut down, jammed, if you will.
Yeah, it was weird. And then we were at a place doing some experimenting. I think the last day we were there, we stopped to have lunch someplace. And you know, you can also order food. You can also do that to get bigger portions. And so I was trying to figure out, okay, so if you order food, obviously you're not going to get tapas with the food. You get that with the drinks. And it was pretty consistent. If you ordered a couple of drinks, you're going to get a little plate of something. But then I decided to have an experiment. I decided to, because I had finished my beer before you did.
Yes.
I decided to order my second beer without you ordering a second beer to see if maybe I could sort of game the system a little bit and get my tapas or get our tapas to come with my beer. And then when you ordered your beer, another one might come, so I might get two. But in actuality, I broke the system because we got no tapas after that.
Yeah, and we were also interested to see if you'd get personal tapas.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, if you show up by yourself, they do something like that. But in that particular case, ordering single drinks and separating them just resulted in the tapas not coming at all.
So basically, if you order something, you're kind of off the tapas regimen, where they just bring you a small dish with your drinks, because you've kind of jumped into the paying customer routine, which is typical of what you might expect at a restaurant in the States.
Well, you're ordering food, so why would they bring you more food if you're ordering food? I think they should bring you a little drink if you order food.
Right.
Reverse tapas.
Yeah. They could satiate your thirst, mm-hmm. In kind of a reverse way. That would be kind of appropriate, but it just doesn't work that way. It's basically a way of... it's like a prolonged appetizer, a prolonged... free bread. I mean, we really don't have an equivalent in the States, so it's really hard to describe.
It's like them bringing bread to your table, and then you eat the bread, then they bring you more bread. We're very unimaginative as far as what we bring to people, but in Spain, they always bring you something different every time you order a drink. Well, I should say in that part of Spain. It doesn't happen in other parts. It certainly doesn't happen in Barcelona. But it is really kind of cool.
Yeah, it's... not only is it a real treat, it's, I think, safer. I really do. You're drinking smaller portions, and you're having food with it. And if you do a whole night of drinking, which is just like what we might imagine at a pub or a bar, pint after pint, shots, whatever you do when you go and drink, and you even have a peanut or two that's there at the bar just 'cause, it's not the same. You could do a whole night of tapas and not feel really impaired or even sick. And I think it's all too common in the States for people and other parts of the world, but just in general, when people drink, they really just drink, and it becomes dangerous and then ultimately not as fun. With the tapas system, it's a brilliant way to continue to drink, but you know you're going to be eating a little bit of this, a little bit of that. It stretches out your ability to get impaired, and it allows you to really enjoy the drink as well as getting some sustenance, some other things in your belly, and that in turn absorbs a bit more of the alcohol than just straight drinking.
Yeah, I think also it must be a really cool experience when you do this with a whole bunch of people, because then you have a variety of tapas coming out. It's always flowing because the drinks are always being re-poured and reordered as it's kind of a consistent thing. But from what I read about the whole tapas thing, it's really not supposed to be a meal in itself. It's supposed to be what you have between meals, between lunch and dinner. Tapas to sort of whet the appetite and that kind of stuff. But I think it serves as a pretty good meal as well over time. What we do, there are some places in the States that do this, very few. But if you go to a Spanish place, you will see a tapas menu where you pay a certain amount for every item. It's not the same thing. It's not the same thing as what they do here, where it's free. It comes with the drink. That is something that we don't have back home, and that's something that I'd sure like to see. I can't imagine it actually happening, but with some creative people, I think they might be able to make it work.
Yeah, it's so funny that our impression of tapas is just, oh yeah, you buy small snacks. It's like buying hors d'oeuvres or something. But they're not hors d'oeuvres, and they ought not to be paid for. Yet we've kind of created a way to monetize a cultural tradition that by no means involves money other than you buying a drink.
I should also point out, it's not just the States that's guilty of that. Every other country in the world doesn't do what they do here in Spain. As far as the whole tapas thing, that's a uniquely Spanish tradition, and
there's a huge distinction to be made.
Mm-hmm. So we had a ton of fun with that. Although I think we both are kind of sick of it now, aren't we?
Yeah, we're extending this challenge to people in other parts of the world to bring this form of eating and snacking and socializing, but we ourselves have explored it about as much as we can tolerate, and we're perfectly happy to buy a nice meal or make our own food at home or something.
Yeah, but, okay, why are we tired of it? I mean, it's free food. It's coming to us. How could we be tired of free food coming to us all the time?
Well, let me put it this way. The Variety itself is quite varied. Like, tapas themselves are quite varied. There's a lot of different types of dishes you can get. And, of course, if you go to different places, everybody's got a different twist on their tapas.
Yes.
But it's, as you said, not a meal in and of itself. And though it is satiating and enjoyable, you kind of tend to have a lot of either one or the other thing. Maybe a lot of fish or a lot of potatoes or a lot of bread or a lot of whatever. I think after doing it a lot and really trying to see as much of the different types of things as you can, you kind of crave stuff in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, after having been doing this for a couple weeks, I'm kind of thinking about certain vegetables and the three sisters. Three sisters are corn, squash, and legumes.
That's, I never heard that. Where'd that come from?
It's it comes from like Native America and early colonial farming and
three sisters
agriculture. Yeah, the three sisters. If you are a backyard farmer or if you want to know anything about staying healthy, the three sisters are corn or maize, legumes, which are beans, and squash. And the point of them is there's a lot of nutrients and protein and good things about them, but they also are very symbiotic in the way they grow and grow together. The maize grows very tall, the squash grows very low, and the beans or vines, they grow on everything.
Okay. All right. Well, that's interesting.
So I'm thinking about those, and I'm thinking about all kinds of other wild greens and, like, radishes or whatever. You mentioned broccoli today, and I was pretty excited about that.
I haven't seen a piece of broccoli in weeks.
Yeah, exactly. And,
what else haven't we seen? There's a few things. People don't drink enough juice here, I don't think.
Yeah, like, juices. I mean, there's a lot of fresh squeezed orange juice, but they just access to a variety of juices like cranberry, cran raspberry, apple.
What's going on out there? The conductor's outside.
Yeah, he's signaling. He just flashed his green light on the end of his flashlight.
Okay, we moved actually a little bit from the station we were at, and the conductor was out on the platform just now, and what he shined a green light forward. And a white light back? Is that what he just did?
Yeah, I think the flashlight part is just always on because he's walking around. But this was right after he blew a small whistle.
Yeah, I heard that whistle. And the green light is how they tell the train, I guess, to move forward. Because we're moving forward now, finally.
Yes, yes.
So, back to food and things that they don't have enough of. Well, I mean, the portions are certainly smaller for the most part, which is good. But there are things we miss.
Yeah, that's not necessarily a bad thing. Portion control and portions in general are way out of control in places I'm from, and it's kind of nice to go to places where they just have different standards and the expectations are not about quantity and things like that. But as far as things, just they don't do as much of, like, I believe that the tomatoes are really spectacular out here. I believe the eggs are really amazing.
Yes.
They taste like eggs.
Yes.
The yolks are totally... It doesn't taste like it's, you know, auto-cropped or... I think the chance you're getting, like, a natural egg is just a cut above. Like, and tomatoes themselves, I think, are just better in these parts of the world.
And the meat, too. If you get a piece of ham or something like that, lots of times we were getting local meat. And, you know, it's maybe a pig people knew from the neighborhood. It's that local that it just has that natural taste to it, not chemically processed or anything. You can just feel healthy after having things like this.
Yeah, for quality, you really have to look in the States and stuff like that. Whereas here you're, and we've talked about this in other conversations, like our trip to former Yugoslavia, and in general, I think you're bound to get stuff that is a bit more local, has a bit more love put into it than, like what you said, the factory farming. So there are virtues to those things, and definitely you appreciate them when they're in front of you, but...
Wow, listen to that noise. That sounds ominous. That's our train. It's creaking and groaning.
Yeah, it's like a rumble or groan or grr.
It's so cool looking outside. It's very dark, and we're watching the sky. Our cabin is dark while we're talking on the radio here. And we're heading to Portugal. It's really, really nice.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. It's really good. So, yeah, we've totally explored the bigger cities. Well, as far as, you know, the tapas go and transit go, we do want to go back and check out Barcelona and Madrid, and then also get a bit further afield from those cities.
Yes.
We feel like they're good bases, and we understand how they work, where things are, what they're like.
We never made it to Seville. We wanted to go to Seville. I wanted to get my hair cut in Seville, actually. They have a good barber, I heard.
Barber of Seville?
Yes, you've heard of him.
Isn't that like a murderer or something?
Well, I'm not exactly sure. I thought it was an opera, but, you know, I'm not really sure. I just want to get a good haircut.
Right, an opera about a homicidal maniac?
Well, what opera isn't?
True. Good point.
Yeah, so there's so much more we want to see, so much more we want to explore and do. That's always the case when we go to places like this. But, you know, Kyle, I think we've done it right as far as what we had to work with. We're flexible. We change our plans. One day we may be in opulence. One day we may be in poverty. But we make the best of it, and we try and have fun along the way and explore and make contact with people, too. Whether it's picking up a kid's toy or helping somebody who's fallen to the street or all kinds of little adventures that you wind up in the middle of. That's something that I always treasure, and I found the people here in Spain to be so incredibly open, friendly, and just easy to be around. Yeah, you know, there's pushiness. There's a lot of conflict sometimes when it comes to people driving or even walking down the street, but it's all kind of good-natured, and I've sensed nothing but good feelings for the most part.
Yeah, you have to have a bit of, like, I don't know, thick skin. You have to understand that if you don't bring something as far as the language goes, you're going to have a bit harder of a time. So, obviously, like, handicap or are disadvantaged by not speaking fluently or even a little bit of Spanish.
I find that to be kind of a challenge, though, because making yourself known when you don't know any way of saying something and they don't know your language at all, you have to rely on something different. You have to rely on gestures, pictures, expressions, just common humanity, and I think we do pretty well with that.
Yeah, people, there are a lot, in Spain in general, there are actually a lot of signs for English classes and stuff, and in general, there are not a lot of English speakers in Spain. I mean, there are people that do speak a little bit of English, and that's kind of the running joke, or very oft you hear as a response to you asking if someone speaks English is a little.
Yeah, and you know, ask yourself, do you speak a little of... Oh, that's my phone. Do you speak a little of someone else's foreign language?
Right.
It's, I mean, maybe you do, but odds are you don't. And in America, we just don't stress foreign languages that much. I feel if I stayed in a country like this for a period of time, I'd pick up quite a number of phrases. And I think if you're put in that situation where you pretty much have to be able to communicate... That's how you learn languages. In Europe, that's how it's done. There are so many different languages around you. You have to pick up some phrasing.
Absolutely. And, like, I wasn't thinking at all about speaking Spanish when I began this trip, and I've got all kinds of phrases and lines in my head now, like, dos cervezas, por favor, or no bueno, señoritas.
Yeah, which means two beers, please, and get away from me? What?
Not good, ladies.
Oh, yeah. Why would you say that?
I don't know. If there's a bunch of boisterous guys around, you got to say something to them.
True.
And emasculating them in their own language is the perfect way to make friends.
Well, we can get into that in a future program. But for now, I feel content just sitting here on this Portugal-bound train as we speed into the night. And I think we'll have more to say once we go to Lisbon.
Yeah, I think so. We'll probably look back. I've been thinking here just as we've been kind of going from these transit and kind of the nuts and bolts with meals and how that all works, and now language. There are a lot of interactions. You mentioned picking up stuffed animals, and I love that. I love watching the families and kids and older people too, like the older generations. There's so many people just still doing it, walking around and just total like wide-eyed kids dancing and just going crazy all over.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to look across generations and look at everybody, because that's the pulse, that's the attitude. The women, you got to understand where they're coming from. What are they saying? If somebody trips, you know, go to catch them and you know, be aware, like, be looking out and be an honorary member of their community as much as you can, whether that means picking up a little bit of the language or just paying very close attention, doing your best people watching. That's when you have fun. That's when you get the real gems of your trip, of your journey. It's when you're wide open to those experiences and you play off them. You react not in like an entitled touristy kind of way. Oh, turista. That's another great thing to say. You can just point at yourself and say, "Turista! I don't know anything." But in an entitled tourist sense, you react in a jovial, in a like a excited way, or a grateful, not ingratiate. That's in a thrilled, kind of full of zeal and just cheerful. Be cheerful when you have those interactions, because you benefit, and you can make someone who will never, probably ever see you again, you can make a huge impact just in that moment. They may not even know you're foreign, and that's crazy. Those are the really weird circumstances, when you walk next to somebody and have an interaction, or you help them out in some way, or wink, or just nod and smile. They may not, they'll say something, oh, I've had people say full, complete, you know, whole sentences of laughing about something. I don't even care what they're, I mean, I know they're saying something verbose and explaining something very particular, but if you just act like you get it and know that they're saying exactly something that you would understand if it was in your tongue, you can ride those moments and you still feel wonderful for having had the experience and laughed with someone who has no clue that you're traveling.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. That's the best. And I love those moments from the whole spectrum, whether it's just noticing some young people or tipping your hat to some older folks walking by or helping someone out randomly. It's the beauty of travel, and the stuff that you can't plan for, you can't read it in a book, you can't fumble through it on a menu. It is simply you being the best traveler you can be.
You nailed it. There's nothing I can add to that, except to say that, yeah, you know, when you interact with somebody like that, without knowing the language, you do get it. You do get the gist of what it is they're saying. If someone asks, "Is this chair free?" You don't have to understand what they're saying to be able to nod and say, "Please take it." Things like that. There are so many little interactions, and some of them are more meaningful than others, but. You can be a part of that no matter where you wind up going. And you see the humanity everywhere.
I really did scare that kid when I started speaking like
complete plain English to him. He was like, "Can I have this chair?" I don't know how he said it in Spanish.
Oh, yeah. I was talking about when I told somebody the chair was free. But yeah, you also had another instance you told a kid that he came up to you and said something because there was a football game on and he wanted to see it. And you answered him in English and he was completely...
He was so cute. He was all doughy-eyed. He wanted to pull a chair up with his friend and start watching this friendly match while everybody was sitting around. And I just looked straight at him and said, "Yes, you can have it." And he looked at me like... And he was just waiting for the other shoe to drop, like, what?
It was like seeing a lizard speak or something, because he had no idea what you were saying. It was like complete gibberish and babble coming out of your mouth.
And finally, he didn't move. He didn't take it. He thought he had
frozen in fear.
Right. And then I said, "See." And then, yes. And he just took it right after that. It was so funny. Oh, my gosh. That's just the tip. I mean, there's so many different examples.
Happens every day. Happens every hour. But, yeah, you got to be open to it. And I think that's something that we do naturally, and I'm happy that we do.
Yeah, and you get to choose. You get to choose if you want to try the language, if you want to just use body language, or try to totally wig a kid out by speaking plain English to them. Oh, God, do you remember that channel at the hotel with this crazy English? He's got a whole channel for English speaking.
It's called Vaughn TV.
Oh, my God.
And, in fact, there was a Vaughn radio station, too. I don't know how they get these TV channels and radio stations, but yeah, it just exists to teach people who speak Spanish, to teach them English. And there are these little sketches that go on where somebody is explaining idioms in the language.
You're right, idioms, that's the word. And it's like colloquial speech, like the tough stuff.
Except it was all in English. They were very little in Spanish.
Right.
So we were having a good time making fun of all that because it was just really simplistic. This woman spent 20 minutes talking about her makeup and how she applies certain things. And it was just really kind of a bizarre TV show to watch, but it was the only thing in English.
Yeah, and it's like basically teaching through perception. So you get the visual, you see what they're talking about, then they print on the screen how it's said, or what, like a label for something or a phrase referring to something, and then she's holding it and saying it, so you get this like multi-dimensional education. But it's so crazy to watch if you're a native speaker, because it's like it's all these like quote secrets. And granted, it's helpful, but if someone really, I mean, even if they have that, there's so many more depth, so much more depth and so much more to language that it would help, but it would still be awkward if someone was just using these kind of canned phrases and things. But you put yourself in someone else's shoes, and there's no way I could pick up everything in Russian or everything in German or everything really in Spanish, even with that kind of help. And it's kind of sad that we don't have those kinds of channels when you flip it around and say, okay, well, you know, we spend a lot of time talking about how people should just speak English in America, or just, you know, you come to this country and, you know, speak English, no Spanish, and blah, blah, blah. It's so crazy to think, gosh, you know, it could help us to, like, have some public access or some availability of colloquial German or colloquial Russian or these kinds of things to enrich our community. And when you think about it, some ASL would be great. Like, it would be helpful for us to share about sign language. There are a lot of deaf people in the U.S. There's a whole community there, and a lot of people don't even know how to say thank you in sign or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, it's funny, and it's just such a bizarre thing to see, but these are the things you pick up, and wow, maybe we'll see more of that as attitudes change and we become a bit more global every day.
Let's hope so. Any thoughts and ambitions about Portugal?
Oh, wow. I would like to see it, because the most we've heard really is they've been having trouble
And you've heard about a lot about that turmoil in the EU, some of these southern countries. Wow, that sounds kind of... I don't mean that. I mean, just, you know...
That's what they say.
Greece and some of these new inductees, if you will, into the EU.
The Eastern European countries.
Oh, my gosh, not them. And all of it is really culminating in even real upsets, riots. Greece was having terrible trouble with financial crises and the like. A lot of youth unemployment, I hear, maybe in Portugal. That's vaguely familiar. I don't even know if that's right. But anyway, my information is old. I don't have a lot I don't have a lot to go on as far as what culturally Portugal is about. I know they were great explorers back in the day. Also, the Spanish, great explorers. That was, you know, a big part of my education growing up in North America. So here we are. We're entering into the land of Vespucci and de Gama. No, those are Spanish explorers, aren't they?
And Cristiano Ronaldo.
De Gama, was he Portuguese? Or Vespucci?
You know, don't ask me, because I sure don't know.
Vespucci sounds Italian. And De Gama sounds Spanish. Well, I know there were a lot of explorers and whatnot. So, but regardless, we entered into this trip, or Europe, if you will, via Lisbon. And the terrain looked very interesting from the air, and the airport quite modern. It's a coastal area, so there's going to be water.
There will be water.
And I don't know. I didn't see a lot of skyscrapers or big kind of city stuff. But Lisbon, it ought to be interesting. I'm going to be a little nervous. I don't know. I heard a little rough in areas.
Really? You heard that about Lisbon?
Well, not Lisbon in general, but you know, Portugal, and especially with these sort of media brainwash. Especially with this little, especially with the very little information I have. Just from like recent news stuff, you think, oh my God, they're upended and everybody is just running around and out to do crimes or something. I don't know. I have this terrible point of view and I haven't really done research, so I'm gonna be intrigued. I think it's actually gonna blow me away. It's quite a wealthy town and one with quite a lot of history.
Well, I intend to ask you this question again after we've been to Portugal. And we'll see what your feelings are at that point.
All right. I'll answer your question when you ask it. I think I see satellites.
Oh, not again. Really? Are we going to spot a satellite from the train?
It's really hard because we're in a train. But
we always seem to find ISS in the sky just by chance. We look up and there it is. You saw it in the middle of Warsaw.
Well, I know you were wondering why I was... leaning way far away, not 10 minutes ago.
I thought you were trying to get
window.
Away. I thought you were trying to escape.
No, your breath is fine. But the window itself has such a vivid view of the starry night here, and there really isn't a lot of light pollution. So, as we kind of twist and turn around here, I'm kind of looking. I would not be surprised if we see some anomalous activity from the heavens.
There are a lot of stars out there. That is really, really nice. Well, we're going to gaze out upon them for a while, but we're also going to go to sleep because we arrive in Portugal at 7:30 in the morning. Now, we do get an extra hour because they're an hour behind, being so far to the west. And so it means we might get 7 hours of sleep if we're lucky.
And what is our plan for after that?
Our plan is to kill time until we can check in to wherever it is we have a room. Or maybe we can just drop our bags there, but surely they won't let us in before noon or 3 o'clock or something like that. Certainly not 7:30 in the morning. But that's the only train, so we don't really have a choice. This is another example of one of the challenges we face. But you know what? We'll deal with it.
You want to go see a movie?
Right now? Oh, you mean in Lisbon?
Yeah,
sure. An afternoon matinee in Portuguese. You know, that's one pet peeve I have about so many countries here is that they dub. Now, Netherlands, they do not dub. They show everything with subtitles. And you know what? That's why the kids learn foreign languages so easily. Because,
like that.
Yeah, because they're watching foreign media, foreign movies, foreign TV shows, and they pick up the language that way. And that is like a free pass for any culture that wants to learn another language. Just show movies, show popular television shows, and don't dub it. Obviously, people are going to know the language they brought up with, but why not expose them to something else at the same time? It would be nice if there were better TV shows, yeah, but take what you can get.
Yeah, I would argue on both sides. I would argue a lot of the countries that we might learn language from don't have as great a cultural texts, if you will. And on the other end, I would argue the stupid crap that young people watch and learn English through and then come and talk to you about it like you care is hilarious.
It is, and but they do learn the language.
They're like, oh yeah, I saw blah blah blah, and didn't you like that dumb joke? And you're like, wow, I'm glad you can speak English, but pretty much I'm not interested in talking to you about English or at all because you think that's interesting.
Except we don't have a counterpart from their country to point to and say, wow, that was cool. We like that because we're not exposed to it at all. So, yeah, they get the mainstream crap. But at least they have a chance of getting more than that because their eyes have been opened enough where they can speak in our language. I wish we had the same opportunities.
Yeah, and then they lose the chance to talk to an actual native speaker by citing crap that I don't care about and don't want to talk to them about.
Well, you can always guide them to a better path.
Okay, I'll stop being a grouch about it. But it would be great if we saw, like, more... And I love watching foreign films anyway.
Well, you know what? We can just step into a Portuguese theater and watch a movie neither one of us understands, and I'll be fine with that.
We've done as much and enjoyed ourselves.
If I can figure out how to get a snack at the snack bar, I'll consider it a win.
Me too.
All right. Well, the thing is, we have to drop our bags off someplace. I don't want to go into a movie theater laden with bags.
No.
We'll drop those off, and then we'll see what we can find.
We'll have a very long cup of coffee.
And we'll answer the question. When we come back, we'll answer the question, Kyle, Emmanuel, what did you do to kill time after arriving in Lisbon at 7:30 in the morning and not having a place to stay until sometime in the afternoon? And maybe this can be a lesson for others who find themselves in similar predicaments.
There's always a way. There's always something to do.
Well, right now, what I'd like to do is go to sleep.
Yeah, I want to...
I think I got the top bunk. Is that what we agreed upon?
Yes, you're upstairs tonight.
Okay. All right. And there was some...
You do actually have stairs.
Yeah, well, you were doubting that I could make it up there by myself, but even without the stairs, I'm pretty sure I could make it up there by myself. I've done it before.
At least it's not a rope ladder.
And there's a nice little guardrail up there, too, so I won't plummet off the side.
All right, I'm going to bed, so you can finish up the show. I'll be over here. I'm going to go to sleep.
Yeah, I'm going to set down the microphone as this train...
Oh, my gosh!
...heads westward through Spain.
Are we done yet?
Yeah, we're done.
All right, thank you.
I'm going to turn on the light, though. Ow!
Why would you do that?
So we can see what we're doing? So we don't accidentally erase the show?
Oh, wow, that's bright.
You know what's cool, though? Is before you turn it off, we are in this train right now. Right, and because I have unlimited data on my phone, I'm able to connect back home by tethering my phone and using 3G or 4G or whatever, and actually being able to log into systems and talk to people from a moving train without worrying about cost and all that. That's so damn cool. I'm really happy we're able to do that. And we're able to charge things because we have electricity.
Would you call that 3G?
No, I wouldn't ever do that. And I wouldn't also overdo it and be completely hooked into these things. What's interesting, and this is the last point I'm going to make, is that through tethering, for some reason, I'm not able to connect to actual websites. I'm able to connect using SSH and various other, I can use AIM, things like that. I'm able to check my email, but I don't have web-based email. So if I did, then I would feel like I didn't have anything. So it's another reason not to depend on that kind of service.
Yeah, you raise a good point. It's not technically tethering. I think tethering is the right word, but you're using it as a hotspot.
True, okay.
So you're tethering through an access point that you create virtually on your handset. Little technical. It's late. I'm sorry. I'm tired.
Well, it works, and it's cool, and I'm enjoying it.
But text-based, yeah, exactly. Text-based email. If it was, like, web-based, Google would be trying to, like, do all of the client-side stuff and like, pushing all this garbage to your thing, and why'd you do that anyway? You'd have the Google app or Gmail app or something, but it's, like, it's really nice to run something that's very minimal and doesn't have a lot of overhead data-wise.
All right. Well, lights out for us here on this train, and we will speak to you again after or from Portugal.
Good night.
O Justin Timberlake deve estar a subir, não tarda nada. Está uma luz no follow spot no palco, ou seja, uma luz intensa. Eles estão a ver se as coisas estão a correr bem ou não. Entretanto, Ana, outra mega rookie, estás aqui, diz, é a tua amiga que quer falar? Diz-me que és fã do Justin Timberlake.
Sou.
Grande fã.
Sou um fã razoável.
Fã razoável, adoro o fã razoável. Ah, eu sou um grande fã, sou um fã razoável, fã assim assim. Qual é a tua música preferida, Justin?
What goes around, comes around.
Boa, boa, boa. Eu estou a encontrar aqui pessoal que sabe cantar, o que é ótimo.
Daniel, mas aí encontrei imenso talento, Daniel.
É sim, cheio de talento. Sabes que o teu zero da Mega Hits é, e o nosso jardim abunda de
que
talento.
Contratas essas pessoas.
É o talento que floresce no nosso jardim.
E a palavra abunda também é muito bonita.
Desculpa?
A palavra abunda também é muito bonita.
Exatamente, principalmente a segunda parte da palavra. Eu não sei, mas tu afinal andas onde? Estás a tentar chegar à frente, usar o teu estatuto de VIP com uma antena. Ah, eu estou a fazer reportagem, deixem-me chegar.
É um pouco, sabes que eu tenho uma antena grande e eu, à medida que me vou deslocando, vou tentando vazar a vista a algumas pessoas.
Exato.
Se eu me movimentar muito, abro uma clareira à minha volta e fica um espaço muito interessante onde eu posso dançar e estar à vontade a ver o concerto de Justin Timberlake.
Claro, claro, claro. Sabes é muito. Sabes é muito. Olha, e consegues ver alguma coisa para o palco? Achas que começa já ou começa
não,
mais melhorinho?
Consigo ver o palco, consigo ver tudo para o palco. A Fall Alight continua ali a incidir no palco, mas para já acho que ainda não. Acho que ainda não. Não há, pelo menos, movimentações que apontem nesse sentido.
Eu vou tentar encontrar aqui mais uma... Agora, não, repara. Estou a olhar para o lado e vejo a Catarina, o que é ótimo. Entretanto, mandaste as tuas amigas passear e ficaste aqui.
Elas foram ver o Jazzinho.
São remorsos?
Trabalhar.
São remorsos isto teres ficado aqui?
Não, eu gosto de estar aqui. Por amor de Deus, não são remorsos.
Mais uma que está cá por causa da cerveja à borda. É sério. Já não bastava esta gente toda. Mais uma. Tens que ir para trabalhar, não sei se sabes.
Eu sei. Não, mas eu não estou a beber cerveja sequer.
Pois não, estás só com ela na mão, porque mover e falar é uma coisa complicada de se fazer. Eu não sei como é que está, eu vou tentar perceber como é que está o teu vídeo, se as pessoas dizem efetivamente alguma coisa acerca do teu vídeo, da dança celta, porque eu acho que não vais ter muitos likes. Deixa cá tentar perceber o que é que as pessoas estão a dizer. Não, não é Jessie J. Ora então, vídeo da Catarina a dançar, muito bem, diz o Hugo Machado, acho que tem muito futuro, diz o Ivan Brito.
Futuro com O.
Sim. Estava bom, a ouvir bom. No carro e tive que vir aqui meter um like, força pelo belo trabalho. Este chumbo 79 deve ser teu amigo, certeza absoluta. Só pode ser.
Chumbo 79 é completamente comprado.
É comprado? Acho que é
comprado,
não é?
Chumbo 79 só pode.
E depois, diz aqui, adorei Catarina, ahaha, faz Filipe. Ela ri-se. Entretanto, tem 25 gostos nesta dança. Ainda se fosse a dia, para a Rock Street até ao fim do dia, para tentar aprender mais alguns músicos. Assim não vai lá, não vai mesmo lá. O Justin Timberlake deve estar a ver copos com o Jesse J, de certeza, porque o Jesse disse que queria fazer um dueto com ele. Devem estar os dois a fazer aquecimento.
Estão a trocar contactos.
Devem estar a aquecer a voz, porque o Jesse J já está quente. Entretanto, vou dizer ao Justin: olha, faz assim os vocalizos, bebes uma aguinha e depois vais ver correr bem. Leva um casaco, filho, que está frio.
A Jessica Biel sabe. Não sei se achará muita graça.
É capaz de achar. Não sei, se calhar não. Mas começa por Jota também, assim pode ser que ela não leva mal. Olá, queres falar para a Mega? Diz-me que sim. Queres falar porquê? Gostas muito do Justin Timberlake? Estás cá a fazer o quê?
Olha, eu estou cá para ver a gente a cantar.
Para ver a gente a cantar? E olha, acho que a gente vai começar agora.
Agora sim, agora parece que há aqui algumas movimentações.
Sim.
Acho que já estão a ouvir alguns gritos das pessoas que estão mais à frente e conseguem ver o palco. Justin Timberlake deve estar mesmo prestes a começar.
Deixa ver se temos alguma indicação. Não temos indicação. Estou aqui a ouvir vozes que me dizem que ainda não temos indicação.
Estás com o dedo no ouvido a fazer aquele sinal de...
Calma. Agora.
Vai começar agora.
Tchau, Paulo. Até já. Encontramos-nos no fim. Beijinho.
Tchau.
Lisboa.
Justin Timberlake. Isto é mega.
Tell me, can I get the light? Roll you up and let it come through.